I think a skill that all teachers, particularly beginner teachers, need to have before they enter a classroom is just the ability to truly listen to a child or a young person without judgment. Just to listen, to start there.
Okay, now we're recording.
So I prefer TV shows to movies in general. I like the ongoing plot lines of a season versus that tidy plot arc of a 120-minute Oscar winner. And I mostly don't rewatch a ton of things I view. That's really because I have a recommended viewing list from friends and family that I add to at a far faster rate than I check off. But I'm just not a fan of rewatching things. When I do rewatch a show, though, it doesn't always stay the same for me. I mean, A Nancy Meyers Kitchen will always transport a person, but beyond the feeling that a show gives, the takeaway, totally different. So let me ground this in an example. The three oldest kids in our house are well into their teenage years, and I'm not 100% sure what happened, but a certain iconic show that was foundational to my late high school / early college life became a teenage rite of passage in our house. I have super fond and distinct memories of the first viewing with each of our kids. There was snacks, there was laughing, and there was a mark, there was a shift. Because for a long time, the stuff your kid watches is completely on another plane from you. No one chooses the Cocomelon life, you know what I mean? But when they're older, that Venn diagram of interest starts to overlap, right? So this was significant. It marked a time when we could genuinely enjoy shows or go to movies and find an option we all would really enjoy. So imagine my devastation when I rewatched this teenage favorite, and it was transformed for me. In the presence of my kids, I found myself relating not to the funny and cool teenage star of my memory, but to the mother. Arguments that the mom had made that were so unreasonable, well, she had some good points. And it wasn't just the characters that had changed my mind. It was the whole premise. There were these massive plot holes and storylines that just hadn't aged well. The show that I had literally box sets of on my shelf in college, it had changed for me. But that's just it, isn't it? The show hasn't changed at all. I have been on the other side of these experiences. I am now a parent. I am in a different place. So of course the show would hit me in different ways. I was thinking about this as we wrap up this season of Teach Wonder. We're taking our usual break for summer. We have a full lineup of student and educator programs that will keep everyone around here on their toes and out of their seats. We'll be back in your ears in the fall. But I was thinking about how often you hear people talking about rewatching shows or movies and rereading favorite fiction for fun, but you so rarely hear a person reread something for professional purposes, by choice. Beyond that bloodborne pathogen video that marks my year like an anniversary, I really can't think about a time when I have thoughtfully revisited a professional resource for more than a quick reference. So heading into this summer, I decided to test this out. What does it feel like to experience the same PD with a year's worth of growth on? We had the pleasure of hosting two of the professionals who are contributing to our teacher PD this summer on our podcast a while ago. Dr. Paula Lancaster and Dr. Corey Drake. And I was there. I led these interviews with Julie, and I spent a fair amount of time re-listening to them over and over again as I edited the episodes for you. And I had a really different listening experience this time around. This year, our staff has been doing a book study and focusing a lot of our discussions around equity and educational experiences. And not just throwing buzzwords around like agency for points, but really talking, sometimes disagreeing, and always thoughtfully stretching ourselves to think about some tough realities and big dreams about education. So I made us a bit of an educational remix tape today. I pulled out my favorite sound bites, the ones that I learned the most from in our conversations with Corey and Paula, and I'm sharing them with you today. I've added some intros and discussions from myself, so if you've never heard the original, you can still appreciate the remix. But if you have heard the original, then this episode is a different kind of exercise for you. Because you haven't been living in a snow globe of sameness, you've changed too. You're bringing a new perspective, new interactions and memories, new hurts and frustrations, new knowledge. You're bringing that all to this listen. So I'm going to encourage you to be aware of and reflective of that as we get going. Okay, first clips. We have Paula and Corey talking about how they like to teach.
My role, but I think it's really critically important for us to have a range of pedagogies, to have skills in a range of pedagogies and practices, and also to have knowledge of different theories and frameworks for how students come to learn or how people come to learn in general, because learning occurs in all sorts of ways and in all sorts of instances, and people come to it very, very differently. So if we're going to be able to meet the needs of diverse students and consider their varying interests and capacities, then we have to have kind of that deep knowledge too, and we have to be able to move back and forth from different pedagogies. So, you know, I think that I try to remind myself, even when I was teaching graduate courses, I tried to remind myself that not everyone in my class is going to need the same thing from me at the same time. And I certainly thought about this when I was working with students, with teenagers and young adults. So rather than cling to that favorite philosophy or favorite approach, I really think we need to be able to consider what is challenging about the stuff that we're teaching. What is it that makes what we're trying to teach in any given moment hard or difficult for students? Like, they're not the problem. What we're teaching is the problem. So if we start there and kind of analyze the what that we're teaching, and then think about the various students in our classrooms and what they might need from us in order to kind of thrive from our instruction, that's a really, really good place to start. And so that might mean that even though I personally love to facilitate discussions, I love doing that. And I love the exercise of trying to get students together and have them think together. I also recognize that sometimes that's just not what they need. Sometimes they really need explicit instruction, and I need to be able to give that explicit instruction in a really clear and concise way. I need to be able to provide multiple examples sometimes. So it's funny that when I think about, like, what are my instructional practices? I usually go to the things that I like to do, but then I also know that in the classroom, that's not really terribly relevant. What I, as the teacher, like to do isn't as relevant as what do the students in the classroom need from me in this moment. So I guess, you know, what I would say is at the end of a good day, it would be a good day if I taught something or in a particular way that might be challenging for me, but it went really well. It was what students needed in that moment. So I guess, you know, maybe one way to think about that is I feel like it's important for us to be eclectic in our approach to teaching and to be able to draw from kind of a range of pedagogies and move in and out of them as needed.
Yeah, absolutely. So really, children as sense makers is at the heart of that. The other piece that's at the heart of that is teaching that focuses on what students know and understand, and then building on that versus trying to find what they don't know or what they haven't done yet, or because you can't learn by building on things you don't know and you don't understand. You learn by building on the things you understand. But our school system is often so set up to point us towards the deficits, point us towards the things, label students by the things they don't understand. And so for me, a big piece of work with my students is, what do your students know? What do they understand? What's interesting to them? What motivates them? How can you find these things out? And then how do you build on those? And that's where we really then get into the math. What do we know about how children's thinking develops in math? And based on that, given what your students know now, what would be a good next problem for them to work on? What would be a good set of numbers for them to work on? How would you design that task for your students to move them the next step from wherever they are to wherever we want them to go eventually? And so it's a lot of learning to notice and listen to children's thinking, and then to design tasks and write problems that will facilitate children in moving that next step on those progressions.
This idea of teaching children math, not teaching math to children, that hit me differently this time. I'm not sure if it's the end of the year feels I have, thinking about my kids' stellar and less than stellar school experiences. I root for my own kids, and I'm rooting so hard for the education system. Doing that simultaneously is sometimes a challenge. But as I think about the educators who have mattered to me most as colleagues in the professional sense and to my kids, the idea of teaching children first, then subject, that has been a point of clarity for me.
Absolutely. And again, it's our job as teachers to not tell students what that bridge is made of, but facilitate the experiences to help bridge for them, to help them build on what they know. I think it's like a really common phrase that can be kind of trite, but it really is the difference to me between, are you teaching math or are you teaching children? And I'm teaching children mathematics, right? I don't want to lose the content. The content is important. I want them working on, hard problems and making sense of challenging math in conceptual ways. But I'm starting, like you say, with the child. We're teaching children math as opposed to teaching math to children. So, I could cover 10 pages in the textbook, or I could really have students understand one concept. And, the pressure is to cover the 10 pages, but the goal is to have them understand something and understand it deeply. And it took me a while to get to that place. And I think it's still hard, right? Like the system just pushes us and pushes us to not value that and to value coverage instead. So
Paula's commentary fits well here.
When I was working on my graduate degree, I spent a considerable amount of time and focus on self-determination and self-advocacy skills. And that was actually what my dissertation focused on. And this was for students with disabilities. But when you get into that area, it does change the way I think, at least it did for me. It changed the way I thought about young people and their humanity. Once you've read work in that area, you can't walk away and not have that realization. And I think about how often I, as a beginner teacher especially, really wanted the classroom to be calmer, smoother, quieter, whatever that might be. And that their voices were just not going to let that happen, but over time I came to really appreciate that and want that for young people. So I think that is one of the areas in which I feel like I have changed my thinking quite a bit. And I would go back to the way I think about teachers as being in service of students. Our role is to bring out the very best in them. It's not about us. It's about them all the time. And I think that can be really hard. It makes the work a little bit harder too. But it's just of critical importance that we kind of think that way. I've also been, was exposed to Universal Design for Learning as a kind of a framework early on, and had the luxury of spending time with people who have expertise in that area. And again, I would say you can't get steeped in UDL and not have your mindset change a bit. Like just the notion that, so often in teaching when I started, we would talk about academic diversity. Like you'd have all this academic diversity, this wide range of students in the classroom. And we would talk about that as if that was a problem. And once I started reading and learning, I thought, well, how could something that is absolutely inevitable be a problem? The one thing we can count on is that there is going to be difference in a classroom. humans vary. We just do. That is a natural part, a natural order in the world. So why think of it as a problem? Why not embrace it and understand that that's that just is, and that it's our job to be able to connect with students and find what really motivates them and interests them, and you know, work from there. It's not our job to make them conform to us. It's our job to bring out the best of themselves.
So the next two clips I'm about to play are Corey and Paula talking about why core teaching practices matter. Now, knowing what they are is important, and you're welcome to look up the show notes or look in the show notes for the links. But for now, I just want you to hear their conversation and their question in terms of your own teaching. Think about the questions that they pose and the commentary they have about your own teaching, whatever that looks like today.
You know, for a couple of years, I had been talking with colleagues and peers and people both at the institution I was working at, but also just others across the country who I've known over the years. And we would lament the same thing, which is that, or same things, I should say, one of which is that when it comes to instruction in particular, or the work that teachers do, that our profession lacked precision. Like our language and our way of talking about teaching was so imprecise. So we made it sound like it was this really easy thing that anybody can do. We were very vague about teaching. You know, even the term classroom management, I would hear people talk about how this particular candidate was really strong in classroom management, or this particular teacher candidate was a little bit weak in classroom management. I have no idea what that means. That is such a vague term. But to try to drill down and really understand would only kind of show us that if you had a room of 30 educators, we would all define classroom management differently.
Like, how do I shift from covering the textbook and direct instruction and things like that? How do I shift from that to a more student-centered classroom, to a more equitable classroom, to a more ambitious classroom?
So in these next clips, you're hearing Corey and Paula talk a little bit about the core teaching practice they think is foundational, or maybe is the one that you start with, or is maybe the one that all others kind of build off of. And it wasn't an easy question for them to answer. It doesn't really matter what their answer is. What I want you to do is just listen to their responses. And again, think about this as a reflection on your own teaching this year, this semester, this week, or this moment.
I would say the practice that lends itself best to kind of reinforcing listening and also opening your eyes up to the value that these young people bring to the classroom, the just brilliance that they bring to the classroom, is eliciting and interpreting student thinking. So I do often think of that one as kind of the place to start. I could be wrong about that. It's hard. It's a really hard practice. It might be better to start with something a little bit easier. But I think if you pull it apart and just begin with just generally listening, just, hey, listen to a child, just be quiet and listen. Start there and then build into, now, how do you ask great questions of a child? What does that sound like? What is it like to ask a child a question that he or she, that is worthy of an answer, you know, that is worthy of thinking? So you can start to tear it apart a little bit, even before you get into interpreting. In fact, hold off on interpreting because they're going to want to do that anyway. So hold off on that. Just listen and then ask questions and figure out how to do those things. Because to me, that practice, I've described it, I'm sure others have too, so I don't claim that this is, you know, my words, but it has always felt to me like a stake in the ground. It is the practice that says that this is how we think about kids. We think that they are worthy of being heard. We think they have something to say that we should be quiet and listen to. And we think that it's so important that we should spend time occasionally asking them what they think about things and letting them talk to each other about what they think about things, and that we shouldn't judge it, respond to it, correct it. None of those things. We should just listen.
Based.
So I think about what you just kind of laid out, which is a really great theoretical way to kind of work through your practices that doesn't think about staff meetings and emails to parents and parent-teacher conferences, right? And some of those things. So right. When you think about doing this, right, doing this work as a teacher, whether you're a new teacher or a more experienced teacher, what are some challenges that you associate with getting down and doing this work?
I am so glad you brought that up because I think that is so important. And I think there are at least two pieces to that that I think have been really lacking from most teacher preparation programs, you know, curricula and experiences, right? One is just understanding the kind of logistical and technical aspects of teaching, right? So some of the things you named are kind of the technical aspects, like you need to know how to do the grading and you need to know, and, you know, you need to know just how to learn about a system and become part of a system. But related to that, the things that we're talking about, especially when we talk about the core practices and the equitable and transformative potential those practices have, what we don't always talk about is how do you do that in an existing system? How do you use these practices in a system, like we said earlier, that's really pushing you in a different way?
I'm ending the clips here, which is unsatisfactory, to say the least. But I also think it's honest. I would love to be able to tell you that there is a PD or a path or a roadmap that is out there that will let you help see children as sense makers, let you be the most joyful teacher with zero roadblocks and issues, that the student that keeps you up at night, for whatever reason, that student's life will see a total turnaround if you just follow steps 1, 2, and 3. If it was that simple, someone would be selling it on Teachers Pay Teachers already. So here's where I'm left. At the end of this teaching cycle, saying goodbye to students we've been seeing consistently, welcoming new and familiar educators onto our campus and around Michigan for some intensive teacher professional development. I'm starting to plan my own fall teaching for a new group of kids who are outside my current grade band and comfort zone. And I'm going to recognize some truths about teaching. Teachers have a lot of things that happen in their workday and workplace that are outside of their control. Policy and school behavior systems and observations and a bunch of other words you do not want me to say on the brink of summer. There are practices in schools that brought out the very worst of me, both personally and professionally. And I could name 11 things right now that my administrator or my superintendent or my state or my students could have done that would have given me the space to be the best version of myself. And here's something I can say with absolute certainty. My students would have a list of things that I could do that would bring out the best versions of them too. So we talk about this pendulum swinging, and you might hear this and think, oh, it's just a rebrand of the ideology we've swung by X number of years ago. You might be right. I mean, we're still talking about Vygotsky in 2023. But you are not the same educator now. You've grown and changed. You've sat face to face with other human beings for hours. You've watched them grow in their best moments and their worst. So what have you learned? I've spent a lot of time thinking about people and their humanity this year. Kids, parents, principals, teachers. I'm bringing that with me. What about you?